Welcome to podcast 2 on responsibility. The topic for this podcast is, of course, responsibility in family. And the aspects that we'll be looking at are three. The first is families in the digital age. So our tech natives, how do they deal with family responsibilities and their phone? The second topic is love and imperfection. How can we be responsible in our families when we notice that the people we live with are not perfect, they're limited like me? And the third one, which we looked at in religion class, is the transformative effect of families. So the first thing is to look at digital families. I always think it's quite funny when you think about personal triumphs in every century. In the 12th century, a young person might think a personal triumph was, I made it to my 20s because the mortality was so high. In the 17th century, it might have been, I only have to work 19 hours a day. In the 19th century, somebody in their 20s might have been excited about the fact they hadn't died of cholera. And now in the 21st century, a personal triumph might look like, I have the same ringtone as Beyonce. And while we can certainly laugh at these things, and the girls themselves are the first to laugh at you know, how sort of tech savvy they are, the truth is they can't imagine a world without social media. And I was very struck by this myself when I went on a social project with teens during the summer. And one of the questions that came up, or the discussion points, was, what was it like growing up in the 80s and 90s? Life must have been so simple. There was no social media, there must have been fields, you had a stress-free life, it was almost like you were Amish. And I guess, you know, we might laugh at that, but the truth is, our teens can't really imagine how social media has affected the way they think. And this podcast isn't about being scaremongery or old-fashioned about it, but it is also about helping them to realise, you know, how addictive it is. But at the same time, us as adults to realise that teens now may seem more sophisticated, but essentially they're the same. They yearn for the same things. And this month I was away with our 6 years on just a 2-day retreat. And what do they want more than anything to do? They want to bake. They want to talk. They want to play. Obviously they pray. They reflected on being 6 year and life after 6 year. They wanted to eat. But I had to ask myself, does that sound very different to what you or I would have looked for in the late 80s or 90s? And so much of the time, they don't get a chance to experience that. I think that's really what I'd like the focus of this, and what we like the focus of the digital media sessions with the girls to be, is, so if digital media is fantastic, social media is fantastic, but if we spend too much time on it, we're missing out on so many other things. It's not just the dangers of it. And we do joke with them about the truth about Instagram posts, and they're the first to say that there is a virtual life that's quite fake and there's a real life that's separate to that. As parents and adults, we're very well aware of the impacts of increased social media usage. And we will be going through these with the girls, and we will be asking them to rate statements. You know, do they agree or do they disagree? And we'll be this will lead to a discussion on the impact on mental health of increased usage of social media. And this has been shown. There is clear links between too much use of social media and depression and lower self-esteem. And that comes from the professor of psychology in San Diego State University, Jean Twenge, who said what teens spend so much time on, when they spend so much time on their screens, that crowds out things that are better for mental health, like spending time with friends in person, not online, and sleeping. Again, things like procrastination. Again, that's something that teenagers totally relate to. Why do I find it so hard to make decisions? And so often the time they just Google things instead of just trying to use their own brains or their own knowledge to come up with an answer. Social media is addictive. There's a dopamine effect about it. You know, is that once the more we use our screens, the more addicted we get, and that's just the science of it. It's no lack of good habit on anybody's part. It's just they become addictive unless we control them. Reduced ability to socialise and form relationships. Again, we'd be asking the girls to reflect on that. You know, the fact that friendships are become associated with likes. And of course, they're the first to say again that that sort of friendship is fake, it's brittle, and it leaves one vacant and empty. Again, the impact social media has on reduced concentration. And there are a lot of concerns out there about that. But it's true that increased social media usage, it does erode our attention span. It does make it harder for us to focus, to think clearly, to think critically, which is what we're trying to help them to do in an educational setting. And again, of course, it reduces the ability to socialise and form relationships. The typical FOMO, fear of missing out, became popular in 2012. And it is leading to increasing sort of sense of loneliness among teens, you know, when they feel that they're missing out or they're not getting the same level of likes or recognition online. So those are things that we will obviously be reflecting in our sessions with the girls on the use of digital media. But as I mentioned earlier, one of our big focuses will be on what increased usage of social media does to the time that you could potentially spend with friends, you could potentially spend out in nature, you could potentially spend reading, developing talents or, you know, hobbies, etc. And I think just an interesting point on this is a point that Sherry Turkle brought up in one of her books. She said, why we expect more from technology and less from each other. And the truth is, we are spending more time on our devices than we are with people face to face. And we can see as adults how that steals our time away and starts dictating the pace of our life. The temptation for us as adults can be to let our teens be less responsible. And in our effort to protect their teens from the negative effects of social media, we can also challenge them less and also protect them from real life. And that's something worth reflecting on. There's an excellent book called Anti-Fragile by Nassim Nicholas Taleb. And in it, he talks about the need for challenge to grow. It gives very interesting examples. He says, well, anti-fragile, there are things that are fragile, like a glass. You drop a glass on the floor and it breaks into tiny pieces. You drop a piece of plastic on the floor, it doesn't because it's robust. But anti-fragile is something that requires challenge to grow. And he says human beings are like that. If we aren't challenged frequently, we don't actually grow. Our capacity decreases. And that's worth reflecting on in family life. You know, is family life, okay, it's somewhere where we want to love our teens unconditionally. But do we also ask them to contribute? And our responsibility is to ensure that life is an opportunity for them to contribute, to be challenged, to step outside their comfort zone, to look after the younger ones, to do their chores at home, to really connect in a meaningful way with their role in their family. Because family responsibility is ultimately the recognition that all of us make families, not just mum and dad's job. And family is precisely provides the opportunity for those moments of anti-fragility, if you want to call it, the appropriate challenges that help them to grow. And I suppose when social media seems to set our teens back, family life is where we can give them a sense of how they are in charge when they are responsible, and family life is where they have the ability to respond and the space to do it. So they're loved unconditionally, but also they realise too that families are made every day. And they make their own families. And we have to help them consistently, you might say, grow in that understanding. Again, helping them to think about how they contribute to family life is another assembly. And, fun. There always needs to be laughter. And teens are really creative. I was on a volunteer program with a bunch of teens there in August on the World Meeting of Families, and you know, there was a couple of sort of scenarios that cropped up and problems that need to be solved, logistical problems, and there's nothing like a bunch of teenagers to find very creative solutions. I think sometimes we don't rely on them enough for that, you know, to be creative. We call our teens and families to be supportive. How do they support the younger ones, the ones who are a bit annoying? And I was very struck by a comment one of the girls made in coaching not so long ago about her 10-year-old sister. She said, she is really annoying. She's like my permanent shadow. She takes my makeup. She just never leaves me alone. And it's just painful. And in coaching, we reflected on the fact that really why she was sort of her shadow was because that was coming from a place of admiration. Her 10-year-old sister really admired her and wanted to be like her. And instead of, you know, just coldly shutting her out of her life, we realised the important thing was to help her not to be there all the time, but to create moments of encounter that where she would spend time with her 10-year-old sister. Because there will come a time, if she shuts her out now, she'll never be able to reclaim that. And there will come a time when she will want her sister to be there for her. But it's knowing how to take the rough and the smooth. Supporting mum and dad. You know, mum and dad can't do all the things I would like them to do. You know, typically teens find it hard to plan or to foresee, and sometimes they arrive, you know, in the kitchen and say, "Mom, I need to be so, you know, in so-and-so's house, or I need to be at that basketball practice at this time," and they haven't told anybody. And it's all good for mum and dad to sort of go, "Well, look, on, there's a lot of things on today, and I'm not sure how we're going to get you to so-and-so's house. How can we do it?" Bring them into the sort of working it through, so they help. We're helping our teens to realise that they're not the only person in the house, and there are many other people and plans to be factored in as well. Helping them to work on a relationship, you know, not getting on with a parent, you know, and it could be a particular parent who's very like them, and that's normal. So not letting them sort of go take a vow of silence or just backing off or not bothering, you know, encouraging them to make a relationship work. That's responsibility. Helping them to realise they have the ability to respond. And their learning in that process is going to help them in future scenarios when they're in the workplace or in college and there are characters they find a little bit more challenging to deal with. They'll have the learned ability to deal with that. Helping mum and dad to rest as well, that's an important thing. And time with mum and dad. You know, I was very struck by one of the TY students who is has got work experience in one of the local theatre companies. And we were chatting about it. And anyway, it turned out that she spends time with her dad watching old vintage movies, the ones that he saw when he was her age. And through that, she's developed a great love of cinema. And she wants to work in cinema when she's older. And I thought that was a lovely thing, you know. Trying to find interests that one shares in common with one's teens really helps relationships grow. It means that our relationship with our teens isn't always about, "You can't do this, why did you do that?" And it's not, it's a relationship that grows in another context. And it's not so easy to do this. You know, it takes time, it takes planning, and sometimes we get it right and sometimes we don't. But these things are all truly important. And I suppose the next point we need to look at is love and imperfection. And I suppose in every family, well, family life's not perfect. It's not meant to be. That's a myth. So when we hear a phrase like so-and-so's house is so much cleaner or so much nicer or so much whatever, we need to listen, take it in, but a pinch of salt. In fact, we need to be very cautious of the word perfect in our own homes. Sometimes maybe we'd love if our family life is a little less crazy. But wherever there are human beings, life is messy, and some of the greatest little miracles happen in very messy environments. I'm obviously not saying total chaos, tidiness and order are good, but they're at the service of the bigger project, which is the family. And I suppose we're in a world where perfection is highly rated and is seeped into our culture, almost as a core value or a virtue. And in fact, in our teenage girls' world, the term effortless perfection has become part and parcel of their attitudes. This term was first coined in Duke University's landmark study, and it signifies the constant pressure felt by college women to be smart, accomplished, fit, beautiful and popular, all without any visible effort. And that obviously led to a lot of mental health issues among their female students. So I suppose what we're trying to help our teens to do is to step back from this idea of perfectionism and to look at it very critically. Our teens have a great sensitivity to social justice, and that's often coupled with the tendency to be judgmental, and that can make our parenting a little more difficult. This can crop up maybe in second year or more in third year as they get a bit older, and you as a parent can have the sense that you're not getting through. Why? Because they may be critical of you, of something you did, something they felt you did badly, which of course we're allowed to do because we're human beings. Sometimes we find it hard to get through to our teens because our families aren't perfect, because we're human. And this can be a challenge for our teens to get their heads around. We can often hear phrases like, "I know you said when you were young," or "Why should I do this?" or "You never do this," or "You never do that. Why should I?" And the simple fact that perfection is not what we're striving for, but flourishing, is something that needs to be unpacked. They can take quite a dogmatic and black and white view in their judgments, and we need to help them balance them out in the light of wisdom and key facts. They can often only see the close-up of things, whereas we need to help them to zoom out, see a wider perspective. And that's where I guess that's really best done by effective questions and dialogue, and that lead them to a softer, more real and more merciful approach. And again, that takes a little bit of time, you know. When they do realise, you know, they do start getting their head around things, Well, that's, I suppose, a moment for us to realise that as adults, as parents, you do this regularly. There's a moment of perspective has dawned, and that's really when maturing is taking place. And I always think of it in light of, there's a beautiful painting by Daniel Gerhardt called A Moment to Reminisce. It's a beautiful painting of a granddaughter with a grandfather. And you can see that she's sort of just, you know, taking in all his wisdom and his gentleness and his mellowness that he's acquired over the years of life. And in the picture too, you see beautiful light and shadow in the painting, the tones of colour. And teens are like a little bit black and white. And we have to show them, yes, that there are certain things that are black and white, that are right and wrong. But then there's a human project, which is your life and mine. And that's a journey to grow together. And that's where they need to reflect, to consider, to take on board, and maybe a little less judgmental. So ultimately, we're trying to help them in the family, and on their understanding of responsibility in the family, is that there are certain habits for their own happiness, their own responsibility. And those are things like sound judgment, future parentability, responsibility for others. Those are, you might say, the habits that responsibility, you might say, foments. A sound judgment, you know, the guidance about right and wrong, what enriches and what degrades. And personal reflection is key to acquiring any good habit or virtue. Future parentability, you know, their sense of responsibility now, well-tried habits of generosity, which are necessary for permanent relationships with their friends and in their own families, are building their capacity to be future great parents. Their self-possession, their ability to control their reactions or their emotions, gives them greater freedom from bad habits. And that's a great place to bring them. And the resilience and the toughness there that they need to be responsible for others. And again, I suppose, love is what makes all this possible. You know, each of us, our students are no different, our work's in progress. And a project like this, to try to help our students to grow in responsibility, requires a lot of love and a lot of affection, and that's really patience and understanding and tolerance and generosity. Failures are going to be part of the human journey, and so often we learn more from our failures than anything else. So it's good to let our students sort of sit in their failures and then help them to unpack them. Love widens our lens, you know, and it gives greater perspective. Somebody is not the sum of their annoyances. If that were the case, well, God wouldn't love us, and that's as simple as it is. Love does not need to be perfect to be valued. And as parents and adults, our job is to be there to dialogue with the students, and to listen, not simply to hear, but to listen, and to hear their pain, their fears, their hopes and their dreams, and little by little build them in this great virtue. I just wanted to finish with a lovely quote which we heard on a Goshka hike that our students did at the end of October. And it was a good long hike, as you'd expect. And one of the leaders, Terence, sent in a lovely lovely quote to Janet, our principal. And then she said, it was a great achievement which was made very easy for Jim and myself due to the girls being so positive in their attitude. And he went on and on. He talked about, you know, the different values they showed. They're united. They're being united to each other. They listened. They sang. They followed, you know, indications of that challenge. But he simply said, if these girls from Rosemont are representative of the generation that will lead us in this millennium and the challenges that have to be faced up to, then we are very well prepared. So I think it's nice to reflect on that, to think that our students are the ones who are going to go forward in the next millennium and hopefully be those great leaders, whether at home in the family or on the world stage, and to bring our society into its next wonderful stage.